Alright guys, yeah. So, welcome back to the podcast. We haven't been around a while. Had to get some actual recording equipment. Apparently, holding your phone up to your face and just trying to cut a podcast is not the smart thing to do. Different. And tonight, we are here with our newest member of EMS Hooligans. And if you guys have been going to our webpage and checking that out, basically our staff writer as well, if you're seeing all the really actual informative articles that are being written, we're here with Jeff Lee. Jeff, hello.
What up?
He's not good at being recorded.
Not good at being recorded.
Can write really well, though. So, Jeff, how long have you been a medic?
6 or 7 years. Been firing EMS.
And he's fairly young, guys. He's been, what are you, 20?
27.
27 years old. So, been doing this a pretty good amount of time for as young as he is. I, on the other hand, am an old man.
You are an old man.
I make it look good. So, yeah, guys, if you're getting a chance, check out our website, emshooligans.com. We have that going now, and, of course, Facebook. Like, follow, all that stuff. And when we brought Jeff on, you know, he kind of really fit us really well because we are just strongly opinionated and we're not really always going to do things by fact. A lot of times we're doing how we feel on things. It could be a rant. I mean, don't get me wrong, when it comes down to the medicine, we're going to back it up with fact. But you know, when we see EMS as a whole, EMS as a state, that's going to be opinion based on our experiences. Like, but a lot of the opinions are exactly the same. I mean, he shares a lot of the same opinions. What was it? When one of the episodes that you weren't with us yet, we talked about how being new and coming into the EMS service, how you have the older guys who just really, absolutely treat new guys like shit. Yeah. That's actually what got me and Jeff talking about it one night was we were talking about how, you know, when I was new, I remember how I got treated and how, you know, how it is nowadays. And, you know, it's very much the same. You know, they still treat you like crap. And one of the things I want to talk about tonight was something we actually have talked about already, is do you think there should be some kind of time limit on how long a person should be an EMT before they can move forward and try to get their paramedic?
Right. That's what you always hear. You know, they should... Oh, you should be an EMT 2 years, 3 years, 4 years before they even, you should pursue it. I don't think that's true, though. I think that's detrimental to our service. And, really, there's an old teacher of mine that said, like in his practice, all the EMTs that had been doing it for a really long time were kind of set in their ways. And once they actually pursued being a paramedic after a long time, his fail rates were mostly them. The new people actually did really well. You know, just coming out, maybe not fresh out of EMT school, but within a year, within 2 years, right. They just took the information better. Which is, you know, you're learning to take a test, so it makes sense that you'd be better.
Exactly. And I noticed that when I went through my medic class, the people that I was seeing fail or struggle more than others were the guys who had been in EMS, you know, and been EMTs for a really substantial amount of time. And, you know, I was kind of one of those guys, but I had a really weird kind of background. Like, I took time off, and I was I only did it part-time, so, you know, before I really, you know, dove back into it and made it full-time, So, and I had already had a degree, and I already had been, you know, I was kind of used to how, I guess you would say, higher education works.
Right.
And I think that's important as well. And a lot of these kids coming out of high school and have had some college or, you know, they already know how our higher education class works, and they're a little more prepared to break down the book, break down what they're, you know, the information they're receiving, whereas, you know, some of these guys who have been in EMS, and I mean, we were talking about this earlier, you guys got 15, 20 years as an EMT, and then you all, you know, you want to be a paramedic now, and they struggle.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were also talking about how that kind of, they even go as far as to, some of them, I won't say all, but a good amount of them will sit there and will put down guys who are newer EMTs, and they have decided this is, you know, the career path they want to pursue. And I've said it a thousand times, is if you want to make EMS a career, I personally feel like you need to go medic if you want to make any kind of a living. And, you know, we need good EMTs. I mean, obviously, if that's your thing and that's your gig, that's cool, that's great. But we were talking about this earlier, is we see a lot of the ones who are telling these young EMTs or these newer EMTs, you know, don't go straight for it for your paramedic because, and the number one thing we always hear is, you know, you want to get, you know, get good at your skills that you have, get your skills honed, you know, get better at your skills now.
But you teach that in paramedic school. I mean, when you go through first phase, you go through all your BLS skills and make sure you're proficient, because we build all our ALS skills on our BLS skills.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a load to say, well, you know, you can't possibly do this unless you've been an EMT for 5 years and splinted 4 hips and backboarded 10 people. Like, we'll teach you how to do it anyway. You know how to do it already as an EMT. You just don't have the field experience maybe, but you don't really need that necessarily.
I think it's good for someone to be working in the field actively while going through school.
I think that is should be, you know, up until at least you do your clinicals, because at that point, you know, you're still on an ambulance. But it wasn't, I know they've changed things a little bit, at least around here, where like first phase, you know, still assisted phase, they're doing ride time still. Almost immediately when they get into class, which is a good thing, because you have a lot of hours you have to get through.
You really do.
But, and then you're not scrounging in the unassisted phase trying to get 10 BLS runs squick, you know, in there before you're done, but...
Yeah, yeah. I know they took away, actually, I think they took away, like, I think it was, like, certain amounts of contacts and certain things.
I think they've revamped it a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Not really sure.
Well, and there's barriers, so there's state, not state, there's national minimums that you have to meet, but most places go above and beyond that. Like, nationally, you have to have 5 innovations to be a practicing paramedic and
right.
Like, actually test. Most places I've seen is 10, which is still
that was big. That was mine.
You know, it's, I'm going to go off on a tangent if I talk about that, but that's, you know, we're all just occasional innovators. None of us really, even doctors and respiratory therapists to a degree, I mean, we're all just occasionally doing that. 10's not enough, but
no,
it's a different topic.
Yeah, we can, and we will address that. We'll definitely give you that rant in the future, because...
I have a soapbox.
When yeah. Jeff gets up on his soapbox, on his rants, it can be very phenomenal, or it can be like going down the rabbit hole.
It depends on if I'm yelling at people or not.
Right.
That's the big... If I'm telling you something or if I'm informing you of something.
Which is two completely different fucking things.
It really is. You know, if I'm giving you the knife hand or if I'm...
If I'm knife handing you mid-sentence, then this is matter of fact, and I'm really... Your opinion doesn't matter anymore.
Right. Like I'm talking at you.
Yeah. I'm talking at you. You are the wall. I don't even give a shit anymore.
Yeah, it's pretty true.
Right.
I try not to do that. It's hard. It's hard. Very opinionated.
I mean, I think we all are when it comes to that. But like I said, like I've come across older medics and... you know, I think it's like with time, with age, you look back and you're like, you know what? I really wish I would have just gone after it earlier.
Absolutely.
You know, I wish I would have just been like, you know what? I do like it. This is what I want to do. I'm going for medic instead of let's spend some years on the street because everybody tells me this. Well, you know, the people that are usually telling you that are not medics.
Right. Here's the dirty little secret is being a paramedic isn't as hard as we pretend like it is, because it makes us all feel better. It makes us all feel like we did something more than anybody else can.
Right.
And we do have like a 50% pass rate nationally first attempt. Okay, that's not great. Second attempt is like 80%.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we tote those numbers around because we think, essentially, you know, we think we're more important than we are. But if you can dedicate the time, that's the biggest thing. If you can dedicate the actual time to studying and reading the material and maybe asking questions so you can comprehend it, you can pass this test. That's all you're doing.
Absolutely.
Is studying for a test. And that's what I tell new paramedics that all the time, or new paramedic students. Pass your test, I'll come teach you to be a paramedic. But you got to get past that first.
And, like, medic class I went through was very much... self-taught.
But that's what everybody says. That's the problem. My medic class was the same way. My instructor was a very, very intelligent guy. I have nothing bad to say about him. But paramedicine as a whole, you have to grasp it. This isn't a team effort.
Right.
So if I don't understand going in how to interpret a 12-lead or how to interpret a 15-lead or how to do anything like that, I can't look at my EMT partner and say, man, help me out. It doesn't work that way.
No.
And that's why...
Absolutely not.
You know, people always say, well, it was really self-paced. Well, intrinsically, it has to be, you know?
Yeah, it really is. You really are getting a lot of information shoved down your throat at once.
Absolutely. But it's more like wrestling and less like football. You know? You're on a team, but...
Well, yeah.
You're the one on the field.
Considering I wrestled 30-plus years,
that's
kind of why I gravitated towards it, was I've always been an individual athlete, not really a big team, but...
Right.
And it is. It's like one of the best things I've ever heard, and it's a quote from one of my favorite wrestling movies, is there's not a whole hell of a lot a team can do for you when everyone is looking at you and you're the one by yourself running that scene.
Absolutely.
You know, nobody's going to step in and innovate that patient. Nobody's going to step in and...
If somebody does, you just lost your scene, I'll tell you that.
Oh, absolutely.
If I have to come in and take over from another paramedic, it's not their scene anymore.
Which I've done.
Well, it happens. I mean, everybody gets flustered. Everybody needs help. And there's a difference between me helping you and delegating tasks and me having to take something from you.
Right. And you know, that's another soapbox we can definitely get on. And because like you said, you know, these newer guys, it's all you're doing is passing a test.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's all the class is for, is get the information. Because, I mean, I'm sorry, there's not going to be a time, really, truly, for me in my whole career as a paramedic or as an EMT that I needed to know what, you know, the passive... it was Department of Transportation, passive barriers. Like, I've never needed to know, oh, that highway, that turn in that highway, there's a guardrail there. That's a passive barrier.
Right, the difference between an active barrier and a passive barrier.
Yes. And so, like, there's that, and that's just a test.
There is some useless information. But there's also some information that... There is also some information you can build on. You know, like, people harp on the Krebs cycle all the time, like cellular respiration all the time. But you can actually garner some information from that.
Well, there's a lot you can go from. There's... The thing is, in especially in paramedicine, is, you know, just because you pass that test, don't let that be where you stop learning. And
that's a big issue.
And I don't mean, oh, well, I go get my CEUs like I'm supposed to, and I go to my audit reviews like I'm supposed to, and, you know, I'm doing the
bare minimum to recertify.
Right, because, you know, there's going to come a time where you're going to get your ass handed to you on something that...
But that's what it takes.
You could have already known, but also at the same time, getting your ass handed to you is what usually, with me, sparks me to go learn something new.
That's the thing. Like, personally, I'll tell you, I'm not the best paramedic in the world. I never have been the best paramedic in the world. I certainly thought so at one point in time.
Well, that's impossible, because I'm a paramedic, so.
But younger, you know, they talk about this kind of curve of knowledge. And when you know a moderate amount, you go up towards the top of the scale because you think you've kind of seen everything, you've done everything, and you can really handle yourself. And then something bad happens, and you plummet, and your self-esteem plummets, and you're back down at zero because you don't actually know shit. And then you slowly climb your way back up. And that's kind of, I think that happens to every paramedic. I think at some point you're walking on water. And then...
Oh, yeah. Your first...
You miss something.
Your first ROSC.
Yeah.
Your first ROSC as a paramedic on your own.
You think you're...
You're walking on clouds. Yeah. And then you get that one... Oh, God. That one breather that you miss... Right. Totally misassessed.
Right. Or you miss a posterior STEMI on a 12 lead.
Oh, yeah.
Something that you should have seen, but you didn't. You know, you didn't check for it, you didn't think about it, and you're maybe not as experienced as you thought you were. And I think everybody has that.
Well, I think, you know, with me, and I think it's just, you know, I go back to my background a lot because I grew up wrestling. And I wrestled since the age of 8. I went on to wrestle in college. I went on to wrestle on national teams, etc. And, you know, defeat, loss is a great teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I took that forward because I fought pro for years, and I still compete in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and I traveled, and I've competed all around the world, and, you know, there's going to be those times where you go up and you just come short, or you take a beating.
Yep.
And you know, it's at that point in time you gotta be like, okay, am I gonna go back to the drawing board and learn from my mistakes and move forward, or, you know, am I gonna blow it off and let's just brush it off, act like it didn't happen, don't take the initiative and go really dig in and learn from your mistakes, or does it destroy you?
Well, but there's the issue is, as I've seen both as a paramedic, I've experienced one, you know, where something cataclysmic happens, a patient dies because of you miss something critically important, and you have a detriment for it.
And let's make that real clear off the bat, when you become a paramedic, you're going to kill somebody.
Absolutely right.
You're going to look at
it. Or assist in it.
Yeah, you are going to lose a patient, and it is going to be something you missed or something you did.
Right.
It's not intentional.
But there's only two ways you can handle it. One, if you get away with it, which most people do, you pretend like it didn't happen. You just brush it away and say, okay, well, that won't ever happen again because that was a high acuity, low volume run, and... Wow, that sucked, but I don't have to worry about that again. Or two, you say, wow, I screwed up. that's my fault, and I need to do something about it. And you delve into education more. Mm-hmm. And you see both of them walking around, still being paramedics. And I know which one I'd rather have work on me. But, like, okay, I'll give you an example. Because very much, I used to not talk about when I'd screw up at all. And I either have enough experience now, or enough clout now, or I just don't care anymore that I'll talk about it now.
It was all, I tell you what, it was always, especially when I was new to it.
Oh, no, you don't want to look like the dumb new guy.
It was always, I could blame it on a million other things.
Absolutely. But ultimately, like this one's my fault. I went on a diabetic episode, a multiple amputee. And they're hypoglycemic, their blood sugar's like 20. Not really thinking about it, being a newer paramedic, I gave an AMP a D50. This is when D50 was so popular. I started an IV, gave an AMP a D50. And nothing happened. Their blood sugar shot to like 200, 250. But they were still not with it. They didn't wake up. And I was like, man, what is going on? I don't really get it. And you can't really do, like, a Cincinnati on this person because they're multiple amputee, and they're disoriented. You can't really do it the way you'd want. So I took them in the ambulance. I took them to the hospital, and I got to the local ED, and as we pulled them out, they got a gaze to up and to the right. And I looked at my partner. I said, they're about to code. And he said, what? I said, I think I killed them. They're about to code. And what had happened was they had a massive stroke, which probably would have killed them anyway. And I gave D50 to it.
Which is extremely necrotic.
Right, which did not help their giant brain bleed, and in fact worsened it a great deal. And because of that, like I said, they probably would have died anyway, that far gone. Not at a facility that can do burr holes, at a Band-Aid station that,
right.
You know, they can't do burr holes, they can't go in and get it, they can't really do anything pertinent here. You know, massive midline shift. I saw a CT of it later, and within an hour she was dead. And that's, you know, that stuck with me. As a newer paramedic, I felt for years like I killed her. Like I was very much at fault for not doing a proper assessment. Even though it would have been very difficult to do. And because of that, I learned a lot more than just a plain Cincinnati stroke scale. I learned how to do a neuro exam like they do in the ER. And because a Cincinnati stroke scale, if you don't know this, only carries about 50% weight. It only will evaluate about 50% of strokes, and of those, these are really bad strokes. Whereas a neurological exam does more so. So it's a lot of little things that I do now, not just from that one event. I'd like to say that was the only error I ever made. It's not. But that one event did spark me into saying, wow, I'm not near as competent as I thought I was. That wasn't even on my radar. And that is my fault.
One of mine was very similar to that. This one is one of those ones that definitely threw me, and I was very full of myself on this one. I got dispatched to a patient with altered LOC, and I get to the house, and there's a gentleman, he's in his 50s, and I'm looking, I'm doing an assessment. At the time, I felt a pretty good assessment. You know, I'm checking his pupils, see if they're, you know, reactive and equal, and he's not really responding very well. I see a bottle of hydrocodones on the table next to him. I'm thinking, okay, this guy and his wife, Emil, I'm getting information thrown at me, and I got tunnel vision.
Yeah.
And
made assumptions around you.
I made a ton. She's like, he's been really depressed lately because of this surgery. He's been really upset lately. This surgery, you know, has really affected him. And I'm not... So I'm going down the road of, he tried to kill himself, he's trying to overdose himself.
Right.
So I'm hitting him with Narcan. I start an IV, I hit him with Narcan. And his mentation does improve. Some. So his mentation improves. I'm like, no sweat then. He's overdosed on this. We're going to just take him up the road to the local Band-Aid station, you know, put him under observation, and, you know, hopefully get him some help for, you know, for what's going on in his life, whatever. I totally didn't pay attention to the key factors of any of that. You know, why does he have pain medication?
What was that surgery? Right.
Better yet, what was that blood thinner? What was that brain bleed?
Yeah.
He ended up having a brain bleed that, the minute I saw some improvement in mentation, it wasn't a great improvement, I didn't even look at any of the other signs because I thought, hey,
I fixed it. Yep.
And I took him down there, and I got very lucky that I didn't fuck him up. But we got down there and they did a CT and they're like, he has a brain bleed. And I stayed there. I called out of service, stayed there, and took him myself over to the level 1 center to get him in, when I should have done that the entire time. And, you know, there was several things. You know, his blood pressure, I didn't even think of what it was. I didn't care. Because I got that whole, I got a reaction with some Narcan.
Yeah.
So it must be this.
I'm telling you, you get that confirmation bias where you one thing goes the way you thought it would. And you're like, yeah, I knew it. I knew that's what it was. And that's the only explanation now.
And that's where I went with it.
Absolutely. Man.
You know, and that's the thing. It's like, you can be the most experienced medic in the world. You can still fuck up. And I had not been a medic that long when that happened. And my wife actually has a lot of fun stories of that, because she was an EMT when I was at the same company when I was a new medic. And we had to do chase medic a lot because we, of course, started having a shortage.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I had to intercept her crew a couple times. And she laughs now because she's seen me work now versus when I first started. And she said, you know, you used to be not near as calm as you think you were.
Yeah.
And you were not as sure of yourself as you are now. And that confidence I have now is not really like a, I don't think it's a false confidence. I think it's a, I take that beat. I take that breath in. Let's see what we got. You know, everything's a grain of salt.
After you do it long enough, you get, not everything, that would be wrong to say, but most things you see all the time, you have a system for it, you know?
Right.
Every chest pain I have, I evaluate them the same way, I do the same things. Their treatment plans may differ. But up until the point of medication or defibrillation or cardioversion, whatever, my system is pretty much the same up to that point, getting a history and running a 12 lead and a 15 lead and starting IVs and doing all the things you need to do. And, you know, you do this for any amount of time in a large volume system.
Oh, yeah.
You have to develop a way to do it quickly.
Well, and you're also going to, you know, there's also regional things that you're going to run into that are, you got things that are more prominent in your region.
Absolutely.
That you're just going
to,
drugs.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yes. I mean, heroin, meth, spice, those are the three kickers. I ran into cocaine the other day. That was odd.
I see a lot of cocaine.
I had not
seen that. I saw a lot of meth.
Mine was some meth and coke on that patient. Yeah, he was fucking
out. Get a little 8-ball action going.
Oh, yeah, a little 8-ball action mixed with a little meth action mixed with 2 pints of, not even bigger than a pint, of vodka. And I was like, ooh.
Never liked the poly overdoses.
Oh gosh, that's something that's become really popular. That polyfarm.
I've seen a lot of people liking to pop Versed and do meth. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. Or like, so not just Versed, but a sedative,
Well, I had a heroin meth overdose because they did the heroin with the meth because they thought the meth would keep them from overdosing on the heroin.
Well, that's not how your body works.
That's not how that's processed.
Those are different receptor sites.
So that made it really fun and fantastic because, you hit them with Narcan because all you see around is heroin. And then they're like, oh, yeah, we mixed it with some meth, and they're still unconscious. And you're like, oh, okay, cool. Well, you're going to get tubed now.
Honestly.
And we're going to take you to the hospital.
I go that route anymore just because I don't like Narcan. As a paramedic, I'm okay giving Narcan. I don't really think, even at the EMT level, without some added training, at least, I don't think they should be given Narcan either. It's not the benign drug that everyone seems to think.
And that's my thoughts on police officers carrying Narcan.
I'm so against that.
I am. And
I'd rather give you a BBM or a pocket mask and teach you to use that, which I know that police know how to use those things already, but we do a good job of training them on those things already, but I would rather do that.
I walked in on a scene and they were like, we gave him a syringe up each nose. I was like, so you gave 4 milligrams intranasal to this overdose.
Which intranasally is already a crapshoot if it's going.
Well, and the thing is it worked. And it all actuated at the same time. This guy came up. I was swinging and angry and pissed at the world, and of course, but you some of the side effects just aren't really spoken about. You don't know if you're bringing them out and they're going to go into a seizure.
Right, you take away their high instantaneously and block off all the receptors. You've sent them into withdrawal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they could seize very easily. They get hyperemesis. They get trismus. Lockjaw from it.
Yeah.
And those things are very easily managed as a paramedic because we have drugs and we have deep suctioning and I can just knock you out and intubate you. It's not a huge deal. As an EMT, it's much harder to manage. I can't give you anything for it. You just have to ride it out. And as an officer, I don't even have the tools to do what I need to do here.
No.
It's very difficult. And I don't, we have very different jobs. A police officer, I couldn't walk into their job right now, but just as much, they couldn't walk into mine without training. And that is firmly in our wheelhouse. Seizures, trismus, poor oxygenation from those things, and recognition of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that's the thing is, where I run at full-time, everybody does a really good job of working together as a team. We're lucky enough to be very close with our police department because it's a smaller department.
Yeah.
And, and my fire department provides the EMS coverage to that area. So we run with their fire department because we work hand-in-hand. We're both fire departments in the same county, and our lines overlap.
Right.
So we're basically the same. We all know each other. We all run with each other. But they come through us for training. So we all work really well together in that aspect. And we kind of keep it to your job is your job. his job is his job, his job is his job, etc. And we kind of all do what's expected of us in that regard.
Right. Well, there's always some overlap, especially between fire and EMS.
Oh yeah.
But I don't think that's wrong to do. I mean, separate your jobs.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Everybody helps each other, but
I think there comes a point where
know your role.
Exactly. Know that I'm trained for if this happens.
I can tell you, the police don't want me shooting at bad guys. My aim's not that great.
I mean, I would, but it's going to turn into a lot more personal. I'm just going to shoot at who I think is bad. It's like, yeah, that guy's an asshole.
Remember when you were late the other day?
Well, if it's below the waist and in the leg, it's not a felony.
It's not attempted murder. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's all that matters.
That's exactly right. I learned that watching TV. But that's, but that comes with years and years of experience.
Right.
Which brings us back to the whole EMT, go paramedic.
Well, that was a real roundabout way to get back to that.
I mean, it was, really was. Really was.
What were we talking about?
Shit, we can end up going down circles. I mean,
but
EMS in a hole just can get you pissed.
Right. No, I don't. I don't think that you need a set number of years, really. And that, my opinion on that's changed. I used to think that you did.
I did too. But I did too. I thought, and then as I became a paramedic and got older,
The more you get into it, I don't think you'd find many paramedics. You might still find some, but I think the majority of people would say you don't really need all the, we teach it to you, and you get a different kind of experience. To try and say the experience you get as a paramedic or a paramedic student is the same as when you were an EMT would be wrong. You do the same kind of runs, you respond to the same kind of events, but the way you assess and look at things dramatically changes because you can do more about it. And, my wife was an EMT, she still is an EMT, and I remember intercepting with her once and her just being irate with me because she had an overdose. And she was going license sirens, hauling butt down the highway. I intercepted with her. I said, kill all that. I don't need that. It's not a big deal, This is my 100th overdose of the day in my territory. And,
such a clean area. High dollar.
If something goes wrong, I can give, get Narcan if I need to, or I can intubate, or we can manage this really well right now.
I've got
some extra help. As an EMT, I totally get wanting to go emergent and get there and have some extra help to take care of this, but as a paramedic, that's not really your thought process anymore. So you can do things like, hey, we don't really need to go emergent anymore. We can take this down and be a little bit safer about it.
And I think sometimes because people have been an EMT for so long, they still have that mentality of, this is an emergency, we gotta go, and I think that adds some unnecessary panic to it.
Yeah, well, and that's a culture change too, though. I mean, what's been happening for so long, even from just when I started, and I've only done this, 9 or 10 years, we've had a slow culture change to not everything needs to be load and go, not everything needs to be running.
No, absolutely. Absolutely not, because I think it's a great culture change.
No, I agree. We're turning more into clinicians and less technicians.
It's less about an algorithm and more about using your head.
Right.
I speak with this one friend of mine. He has, he's a flight medic, and he has been around for a while, and a very intelligent guy. And I'm not going to say his name because he'll know it's him, and his head will swell, and he's already full of shit as it is. So, but he's been on, like, EM Crit. They actually did an entire podcast about him. He's been to a couple symposiums because of, like, just one certain run that he had and how he handled it was, like, amazing. And it really was. It was actually, he was the flight medic and ended up going on this run and being the medic that was there with a couple of the EMTs from my department. I wasn't on that night, luckily, because I wouldn't have wanted this. But he does a great job of just breaking shit down like that. You know where we at now is where we were then, and you know, I can pick his brain, get information about just nuances that, you know, you may have thought of before, but you didn't really apply them to how you treat your patients. And, you know, we spoke about different uses for different drugs because, you know, it just, I mean, little things. I mean, I'm sure most people know this, but using diphenhydramine as a sedative and using it for nausea versus, you know, you're going to Versed and or going straight to the ketamine first or going to your Zofran because not everybody's going to respond to Zofran. Things like that. Learning the broad spectrum of your drugs and what they can all be used for and not just the one thing you're told it's used for, and that's your protocol and your algorithm versus using your head. And that's something that I've gotten from talking to him as, you know, much as possible. And it does, it kind of opens your eyes and you start looking at, okay, wow, I have more capabilities than I thought. Mm-hmm. You know, because sometimes, you know, you're like, man, I really wish we had this drug for this. And it could be something that if you took a time and learned and looked and read, like, I do have a way to treat this. And that's the culture change. And I think that's a great nuance is, you know, become more of a clinician, less of a technician.
Less of a cookbook medic.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not making waffles.
Yeah. I mean, you sometimes, but...
Sometimes.
Sometimes you're just picking up a pancake. But, you know, that happens. That's I think, one of the greater new things that is happening. And that's one of the reasons why I don't think everybody needs so many years on the street before they end up going to become a paramedic.
Well, with this big, you know, it's kind of funny to me that I have to say it this way, but, you know, we didn't used to base things off evidence-based medicine. We used to base things off of what we did in the past, like backboards, like C-collars, you know?
Right.
Those are really big things that we've hit on kind of nationally. But there's more to it than that. But
right. I mean, they're just examples. We can go down the whole damn gambit.
Yeah. Right. I mean, there's quite a bit. But just moving kind of into actually basing our practices off of evidence,
Who'd have thought that shit?
Right? I mean...
Right.
Especially these smaller places where, you know, things trickle down from big city.
Right. And, exactly.
You know?
Big city. Medicine, boys.
Right.
And it does. And I mean... Bigger things come out of the bigger cities because that's where you have more funding, that's where you have bigger hospitals, which equals you have more research being done.
Well, and they can afford to do the kind of testing.
Oh, absolutely.
That's not true of every big city and that's not true of every small service, but in my experience at least, the majority of things that I get trickled down to me from the surrounding area get started in a bigger city first.
Oh, yeah. I mean...
Somebody does an alpha test or a beta test and says, okay, you know, we did this for 6 months and these are our results and maybe you should adopt it and then maybe we will.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I've been lucky enough to go to a couple very large conferences. And as odd as it is, a lot of people don't know that a lot of the nuances in EMS come out of Texas. Texas A&M is one of the forefront hospitals for with EMS. They do a lot of research there. They do a lot of things for out in the field. Because larger areas in Texas, you're in a barren wasteland sometimes. You know, not all of it is big cities, of course. I mean, you can say, oh, there's Austin, there's Dallas, there's Fort Worth, there's Austin. But then you got to go to the middle of the state and, you know, go up a little further north and you can see, like, if you're in Odessa, you know, hey, good luck getting to a major trauma center or, you know, et cetera. So they roll out a lot of those things. And, you know, I've seen that, you know, come out there. And then, of course, there's, you know, other larger cities that are very much hand in hand with their EMS. And I think that's amazing. The difference in working up here versus where I work full time has been completely night and day. You know, I've never had really a medical director be so hands on and so involved and so wanting to push for better protocols or, you know, force you to use your head and what do you think? You know, what do you want to do? And, okay, well, let's go with that. Let's go from here. Let's work with this. And that's something that is amazing because I came up, and, like a lot of people in a rural area, in a good old boy system.
Absolutely.
And, you know, an old Doc Brown, what he says, that's what goes. Mm-hmm. Don't question him. But then, you know, here we are later, and our protocols are 25 years in the past.
Mm-hmm. And but you didn't know that until you came to...
Until I
somewhere came, progressive.
Much more progressive. And, you know, I see other services in just some outlying areas that aren't too far from me getting more progressive protocols. And
it's definitely trickled down, man. I mean,
it is. It really is. And you see that and you're like, man, what the hell's going on with ours? And then baseline is it's that he wants that paycheck, but he doesn't want to put his numbers on the line.
Right.
And, you know, it's like, man, then why can't we just find another medical director? And that's something that we actually have done. And it's a great move because the one that we're picking up, it works as an attending in a level one trauma center. He also works at one of the local hospitals as, you know, level two, but has actually quite a few capabilities now. They're actually trying to push forward and grow and have more abilities. And he's very much, you know, very progressive, and it's great. He comes to our trainings. He's coming and doing our reviews. He comes and talks, you know, does talk stuff for us. And I think that's one of the major components of if you want to, you know, you need to have that in a position that's going to be your medical director.
Yeah.
You know, they have to have that interest. And, you know, that's just, you know, that's my soapbox is I, you know, you want to be a medical director, that's great. But work hand in hand with that service because, honestly, you're getting a paycheck from that service to be their medical director. You know, it's not just so that service has the right to use your, you know, be under your license. You know, because if you're at that hospital that they're bringing patients into and you want them, you know, better treatment of those patients or you want certain things done before that patient gets there or you want better outcomes for your patients, well then start in the field. And if you're the one that's over that service as a medical director, then you have that ability to put that out there. Don't just, well, all you're getting is this drug and this drug, but you got to call for it and ask for it. And I came up here and I was like, I can't believe this. You know, you actually trust us to our training.
Right.
You know, and it's amazing. You know, and that's the way it should be. It's your license. You know, for better or for worse. It's your decision how you want to treat that patient. You fuck up and it is your ass. But at the same time, it's your decision.
Right.
So, I mean...
I understand, man. I grew up in a... Or I cut my teeth in a very Mother May I system. And
You
have to call for pain management. You have to call for sedation. No RSI protocols, you know.
Oh, God, you'll never get sedation down there.
Yeah. And then I went to a...
I just did it.
I went away from that system a little bit, and I went to a very aggressive system that essentially, if I could back up what I did, they said, okay. You know, and that's what I try and gravitate towards now. But I didn't know the other systems were like that. You know, I knew we were behind, and I knew we had a less progressive system than a lot, but I didn't realize the disparity that there truly was between the two.
Right.
I mean, it was overwhelming when I went to a new system, and I'm glad I did that early in my career, because had I waited 5-6 years, like where I am now, and just kind of stagnated in that system, not being able to really practice the way I want, going to a system like that would probably terrify me. I would probably not know how to handle it.
And I think, you know, you know, with my background, that's what I really benefited me is I came out of a very urban, high volume, short transport, you know, system, but the doctors, you know, still wanting everything done before you got there. So that, you know, that helped me with my skills 100%. You know, you can tube somebody fast as shit when you have to.
Right.
You learn quick, and you learn how to get your IVs fast. You learn how to get your skills done quickly. But I also work in an area, it's cool, it's a challenge, because not too far from where that little urban area is that I'm at with that high volume is countryside, farmland, you know, not too far at all. And then you go out further and further and further, and it's like, hey, you're out in God's country, and you're all there is. So you have to also be able to use your head. And
those kind of places are fun to work, though.
They are.
Maybe fun's not the right word, but it gives you a wide variety.
Well, it's challenging.
A wide variety of your skills. And it causes you to critically think, and it challenges you.
Right.
And I think as much as anything else, I stay in this field because I enjoy critical thinking. I enjoy helping people. But I enjoy having a challenge that I can do something about.
Right.
And areas like that, I really enjoy.
I've been in that area for a long time, you know, and I think it's great because I can go to different services, and whether it be rural or urban, I've done all the above, and
right.
I'm comfortable.
Get a nice mix.
Yeah, and I'm comfortable in either one, and that's something that really helps when you're at a service like mine, where you could be out in the sticks or right there in the city. It depends on which station you're at. And so that's what I enjoy, and it is challenging, but it's, you know, it's what I love, it's where I'm at. I don't get much of a choice. I guess if I didn't love it, I'd have to just leave.
Have to move.
And I'm not doing that shit. But yeah, that's, you know, and that's, you know, one of the things that one of the soapboxes I can get up on is where we're going as paramedics and our abilities is where are we going? What is it we want to be able to do? Clinicians versus technicians. And, you know, who do we hold, you know, responsible for that? And, you know, I just like a good way for me to wrap it all up, I guess, is, you know, where we began is, you know, you got to have that critical thinking, and you got to know early on. I don't think you got to know, but I think very early on, if you are going to decide that this is what you want to do, there is nothing wrong with going directly for your medic.
No, I don't think so.
And you're going to get a different experience by going through school early, but you're just learning to pass a test. After that, I think it's on you to go forward, learn more, and not just do the bare-ass minimum of CEUs, but to actually learn. And you're going to fail. You're going to fuck up. You're going to make mistakes. You are going to kill somebody. And, you know, you're either going to learn from that and move forward, or you're going to let that either drag you down, and you're going to get weeded out, and you know what? I don't care. I'll say it. Good. Bye. Because you're now a liability.
Right.
And you don't have time. We don't have time for that shit on the scene. You just don't. You know, that's just the way it goes. I mean, that's why it's called weeding out. You get weeded out. You weed yourself out. That's on you. But you either go forward, you don't. Because you know, it doesn't really, I'm not going to say it doesn't matter, but the street experience that you have before you go to medic school, with it being now just ever changing and ever moving forward, and, you know, so many nuances, and having to be more of a clinician and really staying on top of your field. I mean, like I said, like you said, is you just need to pass a test. And then then you need to really put it on yourself to keep learning and moving forward from there. And, you know, being a good paramedic and being a good clinician and, you know, better outcomes for your patients. And I think that's, you know, kind of where everything's going. So, you know, 1 year, 2 years, 6 months. If that's what you want to do, then that's what you want to do. So, well, we're going to get out of here, guys. We've been just shooting the shit on this one, so.
Yeah, maybe we'll be more focused next time.
Yeah, maybe, but this was kind of more of a shoot the shit moment, and you guys getting to kind of hear from Jeff and get on there, emshooligans.com, and read some of the articles that he writes. They're great. They're really informative. I enjoy them, and he enjoys writing them. Oddly, he's weird like that. Follow us on Facebook. Like us. Follow us. Share the shit out of us. And follow us on iTunes. And my God, we actually are getting published on like every format of podcast now. So, you know, if it's out there, we're on it. And thanks for listening, guys, and we'll see you next time.